Hey, what's up, everybody, and welcome back to the third part of my CSKA trilogy. And today's guest is none other than the head coach, Dimitri Sitoudis. I certainly saved the best for last because there's a lot of good content here, from funny stories of why he came about choosing basketball over soccer, how he worked for an ice cream company, and why he chose basketball after all, luckily for everyone. Also, we naturally talked about coaching. So there's no need for me to go into it right now. Just listen through. There's lots of good content here, from deep discussions about player relationships as well as relationships amongst the staff and much, much more. I really apologize for my audio about 20, 30 minutes into the podcast. I had to switch the audio and it was really broken on my part, but you're here to listen to him and not to me. So just a heads up on that. And after you're done listening to this podcast, please go and subscribe so you're always updated when a new episode is coming out. Please leave a review. Also, go to the YouTube channel and just go to work over there with comments and reviews and thumbs up and subscriptions. So without further ado, please enjoy Coach Dimitris Sitoudis. Coach, thanks for coming on. Thanks for agreeing to do this. It really means a lot to me.
Thank you, Benis. Thank you for calling. It means also a lot to me.
It's the CSKA fraternity never fails, right? So I appreciate the how you want to say the loyalty.
It's been there from the first moment we have met. You came to my office. I asked you to stay in a coaching staff. You had different dreams. You choose your path, and I'm happy that you're happy.
Yeah, we're all choosing our path, but you know, nevertheless, our paths crossed for a short moment, and we still stayed in the same fraternity no matter what. So I appreciate it. But before we go into the bulk of this conversation, I would like to talk about this. Knife in the mouth. I know some people have heard the story. Maybe I saw it, but maybe not everybody knows. And I would like you to share the story a little bit.
Well, you know, sometimes in our job, you're trying to find ways to motivate players. Like not all the time though, because there's a motivation to play for the CSKA team, for the great organization, and always trying to target the best, you know, out of there. So motivation should be always there, but you know, coaches we're trying to find some ways. So before the game one in the playoffs against Fenner, I was just saying to my players to motivate them, you know, like media they were going, Fenner is losing players because of COVID, some of the players, but the significant players, they were there, Nando and Guduric, and the creators were the ball creators. I'm not saying that they were not missing significant players, as we are missing significant players, but I was trying to motivate them and keep them always wired. So I said, we got to go out there in a fight like warriors are going with a knife to their mouth, you know, and crawling over there to the mud, or trying to be as silent, but we're going to have the knife over here. So pretty much we were playing tough on that game, and we won the game one. So preparing the game two, which is almost back to back, as you know, like with a day in between. We said, okay, we had one knife. Now we're going to have two knives. So I used my two fingers, and obviously the players liked it. So that's why they were going with the fingers, like celebrating the final four this way. So they liked it. That was a good one.
Those little things, they can change a season or they can impact the season in a positive way, and they stick around for a long time. You know, those little things, as you say, inside jokes, you know, they're very valuable. And I think people underestimated how much they mean to the chemistry, to the whole understanding on laughing about these kind of things. And they just kind of like, it paves the road for success sometimes. Not always, but sometimes it does.
Well, yeah, I 100% agree on that. Like small things bring big things back as a reward. And especially if everybody is kind of being wired and being connected. So it seems that, and it was obviously after that, with the reaction of the players, that everybody was connected. They were waiting for something, and that came up to the air. It was definitely came out of my, you know, like of my brain, and that preparation, the morning shooting around before the game won. So yeah, the little things, I agree. Like the chemistry, it's very important. And if players are are all connected to the same spot, and nobody's like, you know, try to escape and be motivated. This is very important.
Yeah, those spontaneous.
The silliest thing that it seems silly out there for somebody, it might be very important for us.
Exactly. Yeah. It all matters for the inside of the team, not the outside. The inside of the team, if it's valued within the organization, within the team, that's all that matters, you know. And a lot of times these gut decisions that you say, like before a speech or before you approach and you want to say something, you feel it in inside. I should do it. And then you do it, and then all of a sudden it just opens up the gut the gates, you know, and success comes.
Now I don't know about the final four. I don't have a third hand now. We need to go with three or four, something like that.
So you've before we go, I prepare four quarters for you. I prepare, you know, go through different topics, but before we go into the different topics, I would like to know a little bit about your past and all the success you had. Forgive me, is it 14 Final Fours now? The 14th coming up? Or
That's what they said. It was very tough to count it. But after that, we counted together with coaches. It was 8 as an assistant coach assistant coach and a head assistant coach with Jelko in Panathinaikos. 8 and 6 with CSKA as a head coach.
Beautiful. I mean, that's like winning never gets old, right? So you can just keep accumulating this.
But, you know, we're talking about Final Fours, but nobody's bringing up the final of Cup of Cups with Pau. Back in 1995, 96, actually, we played Baskonia, or unfortunately, the coach passed that he was coaching Baskonia back then, or Tau Gres, or Tau. Okay, so that's also important in my career, the final of Cup of Cups. In Vitoria.
Yeah.
So we lost back then in 95, but some brought it up when we played the final in 2019 with CSKA on the same court, actually, the Baskonia dream, the Vitoria dream, when we won the cup with CSKA. So
awesome.
Yeah, circulating, awesome. The life making
circle. Circle of life, yes. You know, like, just to rewind and think of what led to this success, right? Like what drives winning? I mean, I don't want to talk about the winning itself as much, because with all the respect, may they rest in peace for now. But in terms of like how you got to the situation of winning, the path to it, you know? So I would like to know, where was your first encounter with basketball, and how did you get into the sport? How did basketball find you, basically?
Well, you're right about that. Like, more or less, basketball find me, or I found basketball. And I, you know, I talk about that to the last gathering we had in my small town, actually village that I grew up in, Trikala y Mathias, like 3,000 population. I was playing soccer in a age of 13, and I was pretty much good for the coach, and was taking me not from the juniors, from the the youth to the first team. So I was practicing with them, and at the age of 14, 15, I was like already I was establishing some status quo on starting on playing. But back then we had a long hair, so it was kind of nice. I don't know, like the soccer players, you know.
Was Maradona Maradona was the inspiration for
exactly,
that?
Exactly. Everybody wanted to be Maradona, but I was aware of being Maradona. But that's the story. He didn't like the long hair, and he pretty much saying that, and always pointing that, like, what kind of hair is that? You gotta go and have a haircut or so. But like, I was like curious. Well, why, coach, you care so much about my hair? Like, do I do my job, or I'm trying, you know, I'm competing? Pretty much he kind of, with his behavior, he showed me the way to go out of soccer and go to basketball. So, I really own him. And I said that many times, that the way he exposed me in front of the team, he kind of pushed me to the basketball. And I started playing basketball, and back in age of 15, 16, 86, 87. And 87 exactly, when at the age of 17, the Greek national team was winning the the first European gold medal, the generation of Yannakis, Galis, Fasoulas, Christodoulou in Greece, beating twice the USSR and, you know, Italy and Spain and all these big teams. It was kind of revolution for all the for all of us. So that's how basketball finds me, through the soccer and the coach that actually kicks me out of the soccer because of my hair. Since then, I had a, you know, my
firm haircut.
But you know that what they said, that if you hang around this, a lot of times close to the barbershop, sooner or later, you're going to get a haircut. So I took my haircut. I was there close to the barbershop all the time.
That's funny, but you know what? Funny that you say that.
If I extend it, if you allow me, that you know, back then, also at the age of 17, 18, when you are really want to play ball, and I took a decision to go to Zagreb, back then Yugoslavia, and to study physical education and sports and specifically basketball. Back then, Yugoslavia had one of the best, if not the best, championship in Europe. It was a united Yugoslavia, and those guys that they were competing in a national championship, players of Red Star, of Partizan, of Jugoplastika, of Zadar, of Cibona Zagreb, that I was starting over there. Those are many of them. They found themselves after that in NBA. Like, of course, Dražen Petrović and Toni Kukoč and Dino Radja and Paspal and Georgevic and Danilović and those guys, Rebrača. So in 1987, it was the Universiada, University Games in Zagreb, and they built a great facilities over there. Kukoč was the MVP, and Duda Ivković was coaching that team. 2 years before the European champion in Zagreb afterwards. Back then, it was not the internet, and the information are coming not that often to us. So I was trying to find information about the physical education. It was one case of in Sofia in Bulgaria, but it was the second case in Belgrade. But Zagreb had, besides the facilities, it was giving a specialty of basketball or any other sport you want to choose, and you become a head coach or a eligible coach of any sport at A division, like a first division. So I try to make my phone calls, and a lot of friends, they choose Belgrade because it was closer to Greece, but I choose Zagreb, you know, and I never regret about that. Immediately on my first year over there, because I didn't know the language, so I have to go over there, and I went over there. By the way, I own a lot of my parents because, you know, when you said that that's a karma and you have a vision and a dream, so I had to follow my dream. I wanted to be taught by the best. I wanted to see that. Like close enough. I wanted to meet Duda Ivković desperately, and I met him in 1989 over there first time when he was a head coach of national team of Yugoslavia. So I was kind of lucky, but I was chasing my dream, and I wanted to learn from the best. And as I said, my first year I had learned the language, so I learned the language. But as you know, to learn the language good, you have to make good friendship. I had a lot of girlfriends and guys that were hanging out and playing ball in Zagreb. So I learned the language the first year. And I proudly say now that I graduated on one of the best universities in Europe of physical education, being studying basketball and physical education from Zagreb. Start my PhD over there. But then it came the call of PAU, starting also to work with juniors, a friend of mine since now. And again, how life is making circulating. Igor Jukic, that he was the one that actually, after one of the three games that we're playing, pickup games, and it was tough games, you know, like to go. It was a basket that defines the first division, the second division, and the third division. Like those guys that they were not that good, they couldn't come to the first division basket and play pickup games.
You had to get invited.
You have to be, you know, like, or a lot of players that were injured. So after one of the pickup games, many of those, Igor comes out and says, "Hey guys, who wants to help me with a mini basketball in Mladost?" Before he finished his sentence, I raised my hand. I said, "I'm going to do it because I did it already in Greece, and I'm very interested to teach." We were still in, as I said, I was learning the language and I was on the first year of academy. And this is where it starts a great friendship. Igor now is the strength coach of CSKA soccer team with, yes, with Ivica Olic as a head coach of CSKA soccer team. And like the last 2 months, they took over the CSKA soccer team. And we're together under the same, you know, name, under the same big club, CSKA. And that was the first invitation. Start working with Mladost, not paid, of course, with juniors. And Mladost back then in 1989-90 was celebrating their 50 years of existence. When the president asked me, "Who are you?" The president of the club didn't know who I am, and I said, "I'm working with the mini basketballs." You know, so that's how it started.
That's funny. Like the circle of life, like there's so many sliding doors moments, you know, that you can't really predetermine or you can't really predict. But also with all these stories you just said, told me of how things came together, you know, sometimes it's just by chance. But was there any time where you felt like it could have went a completely different way and not coaching? Like, was there a sliding door moment where it's like you could have turned the right way on the fork and then just never look back?
To be honest, it came to my life. It came to my life in 1994 before PAOK's invitation. So after Mladost, KK Zagreb asked me, and unfortunately also this coach, Pepsi Bosko Božić, has passed. And I'm very you know, thankful that he called me, and I worked with him as an assistant coach, and I worked with a junior project. We produce great players over there. So in 94, I was like without job, and I did graduate, and I was waiting for some good call, but the call never came. And and I got a call to work in a different job, which is ice cream. So I did almost a year being a director of a Greek firm, Evga, which is great and quality ice cream, to help them over there, you know, distribute and organize. So I work a little bit in business as a director or a CEO, having this connection between the Greek company and the Croatian back then company that, you know, are distributing the ice cream. But that was not the word for me. I was like doing it very professional. I was doing it very, very concentrated. I try to learn from the best as well. I've been down in Athens to in facilities of Evga to see how the ice cream is being produced, how you have to teach the drivers to put it on the refrigerator. So it was a short period of my life where I was not in basketball, like maybe 6 or 7 months, but I had to do something else. And that was the moment when the call of PAOK came. So, you know, I said, you know, big respect to ice cream, big respect to business word. I got to go to basketball. So pretty much it came to my life at that moment. But before that, if you ask me, before that, I was going very determined and very decisive in University of Zagreb to learn, to practice. Non-limited hours, read, learn the language, and being actually the year that I was learning the language, I was going to university as a student because it was a generation before me. You know, they were studying before me, a year before. I was learning the language and I had plenty of hours. So I said, "Hey guys, can I come and like see the lesson?" Says, "How? You're not a student." I said, "Who is gonna find out?" There were like groups of 34, 35. So kind of cheating, even though I was not student yet, I was going to the watching basketball, volleyball, handball, swimming, athletics, like track and field, and I was going and joining the others that they already being in the first year. I was so excited that I have to start. I couldn't wait of starting the university. So a lot of times, and one time actually a student that he couldn't swim asked me, I said, can you go and swim for me instead of me? I said, how? They're gonna figure it out. Like, I'm gonna, so when they say my name, you jump in the water and nobody's gonna figure it out. and I didn't do it. I didn't do it because it was too scary and too But I was close to do it because I was going very often, even though, I repeat again, I was not a student. So, but I didn't do it.
Well, it's like, you know, when you're in a different city in Paris and there's a tour guide and then there's a group of tourists and then you just sneak in and kind of participate in the tour. That sounds like
it. At that example that you give, you don't pay money. Over there, I was ready to pay money to learn. Believe me.
No, I believe you. I believe you. So talking about, let's move into the first quarter of this game that we're about to play here. And the ball goes up in terms of coaching. The first topic is coaching specific. So I'll start off with a story that I felt that I went to a car wash. I don't have a car, but I took the car from my dad to go to the car wash in Lithuania. And you know, when you drive in, there's sometimes some car washes have this belt, and then you just drive in, you leave it in neutral, and then it just. So I did that, and that was I haven't done that in I don't think ever, because I used to do it manually, and I let it there, and I had to let go of the wheel. You know, like you have to let go of the control and trust the belt to take you through it, and then you come out clean. So that's the first time I had like epiphany. I was like, oh my God, like this is, I'm a control freak. I cannot let go of the wheel. I have to really grasp the situation. It was really like a paradigm shift for me in terms of like my own personality. But I was wondering, in terms of coaching, when do you let go and when do you control things? How do you feel the situation of what you can control and what is out of your hands? Because coaching is so much more in the hands of the players than people think.
Well, you put it right way, and I'll help you with that. I'll say the quote that Von Karajan says, and if our audience, they don't know who is Von Karajan, they can go and search. Von Karajan, if you don't know, is one of the best maestros in the world. So he says, the best leader needs to know when to leave the bottle down and let the orchestra play. So you got to trust the orchestra. So a lot of times, you put it well enough, like you said, the example with the car, that you have to trust the belt that is going to do the job. A lot of times you need to trust your guys, but you got to bring them to that level. So you got to bring them to that level where now they can go, you know. And that's the limited hours meetings that you have, individual group meetings on the bus, on the plane, on the meeting, on the video session, maybe some lunch, maybe some dinner with the players. Those are the hours you bring the player a lot of times out of their comfort zone. So you bring them to that automatic zone where they can really play the song by themselves. And it happened to me many times. There are things that you can control in your in basketball career. There are things that you can control, especially with this epidemia. I prepare the team to have this certain amount of players, and the next morning the doctor calls and says, you know, you can count on two, they got COVID. And we're about to fly and play the game. That's what happened pretty much on a game one against Barcelona. I was preparing the team with these players. They said, oh no, we have a false alarm. That's a false test. That's a false positive. But now you don't have those two. And then it's pretty much those things are. And this is what pissed me off. And I'm sorry for my language, but those are the things that we can control. If it's a pick and roll defense, if it's a post defense, if it's a transition defense, if we don't share the ball well, those things you can work pretty much in a game. Substitutions, timeouts. The game of basketball gives so much of a leverage to the coach competing with other sports. Because I had talked a lot with other sports and coaches, especially soccer, that they cannot interfere during the game so much how we can interfere into the game. And they do have a lot of interference, though, with different techniques. But still in basketball, like also in other games, the coach can interfere more. But to come back to your question, you need to bring to the team to that level. You need to trust the team sometimes that they can really run the show. And I did have that in 2019 in the Final Four that ends with us bringing the trophy home. We've been through a lot of adversities. And actually, what defined us for that year was our biggest losses. It was our biggest falls. but we decided to fall not back, but to we decided to fall forward. Mm-hmm. So we had losses like bad losses and upsets like Buducnost game. And, you know, kind of you feel the team. If I give that example, we start a game against Buducnost and we are 11-0 or 0-11 because that was a road game. And, you know, the coach, the other coach, Alex Jikic, is calling a timeout. And I'm yelling to my players. And the players are looking at me like, coach, we're 0-11. Like, why? But I felt that the team is playing kind of nonchalant. You know, like we were playing, we were not there. We were leading, yes, 0-11. Everybody will say, like, you know. But you feel your team that it's not the moment. You're not playing correct. You don't respect the game enough. The 0-11 is because of that thing. And I don't know, advocate is, you know, the devil is the advocate over there, or however you call it. The game turns around. They hit some crazy shots. They had some turnaround shots, 0.4 to the end of the shot clock, making three-pointers. Amazing game for Buducnost. And one of our best rebounders and a player you had the privilege to coach, Kyle Hines, loses his man under the basket. A guy grabs a rebound, scores, and we lose the game. And that's a painful loss. That's a loss that you don't want for the team, especially because it was Thanksgiving and the guys, they were preparing with the families to make a mm-hmm. party and everything. I canceled all the parties and everything. We had to be like 6 hours in the gym and challenge them and go strong. And that game helps me to say, you remember that timeout 0-11? We were 11 up. And I was telling you that we need to be alert. That game, it doesn't go well because of that. Like, why are you giving to go right? I remember it's a video over there. We can see it on YouTube. I said to Danny, why are you giving to go right? We said, close the right. Why the hell he goes right? And we were 11 up. So it is that moments, that the moments that the coach can use it in his, on his benefit. And then the season after that goes even harder. We lose against Maccabi at home game 17. They outscored us. They outplayed us. They out-hustled us. You know, that's another painful loss that defines us. Going further in a playoff series, having the home court advantage, which I'm privileged to say in the 7 years we're over here. Actually, 1 year we never ended because of COVID. But in 6 years we played the playoffs, we always had the home court advantage. But never we lost a home court game with a system of 2-2-1. You know how it goes. But then Vitoria is tied the game on the series of five, best of five. Vitoria ties the game. And then now we have to go to Vitoria, playing them on the road. And you know how tough is playing against Vitoria. So that was another painful loss. But the team really united, and those losses, because we had a character, because we knew what we represent. We knew what we have to get out there on the court. We push the players a lot. We push them out of their comfort zones, like Nando, like Corey Higgins, like Will Clyburn, like Kyle Hines, but they all respond at the end of the day. And we brought two great wins on the road, and we came back on the Final Four and win the Final Four. I mean, I said it really quick, but I'm trying to say those moments that they were very painful losses kind of defined us, and we use it as a, if I may say it, as a weapon in our arsenal, coaches, to motivate players and to challenge them.
Yeah, it's like a reflection, right? Like you're thinking about remembering of what happened before to impact the future, and that's the gray area that not many people understand. That recognizing, and I talked to Andreas about it as well. And he said the same thing, was, you know, recognizing where things are going good, but we're not doing the little things that lead to something bad later on. And they can impact the season the wrong way. You just, because winning glosses over a lot of things. And if you're not critical enough with yourself, with the players, with anything, then all of a sudden it's just a snowball effect and it can take you downhill and you can never recover from that if you don't apply the fundamentals, the principles that you're teaching all year long. So those losses and those situations it's important to recognize them, and it's also important to remember the losses and to point them out and always bring it up when the same occurrence. It's just like you said, use it as an example and moving forward, you fail forward.
Well, definitely, because winning teams and I dare to say that my team and our team, CSKA, is a winning team and it has a mentality of winning team, is not get used to upsets. So, you know, when you prepare, and also in soccer and also in volleyball, in when you go and see some crushes, when you have a big upsets, is because those teams, the great teams in all sports that I mentioned, they're not get used on losses. And they handle the momentum. Let's say in a soccer, you're playing great, you're shooting the ball consistently, but you can't score. And then you receive one goal on the 85th minute, and then you're like, what?
Yeah.
You know, like, we shouldn't lose that game, you know, like, and then the second goal, and that's, you're with the back to the wall. So pretty much it happens with the basketball and with other sports too. So you pretty much, you need to prepare the players for that, and it may happen. So you need to actually consistently remind them. But let's say this also, there are not all players ready to accept criticism or to accept being out of the comfort zone. They're not all players ready to handle it. You know, this is where it comes now, your captain, the teammates, or the preparation you already did in the summer. I used to talk a lot to the players before I recruit them. And I'm telling the whole, honestly, how it's going to look during the season. You know, I don't want them to come and after they say, coach, you know, I was thinking, and everybody says, you know what I'm saying? I'm ready to do no matter what to win. So you remember what you said in the summer? I'm ready to do no matter what to win. So no matter when to do is to sit on the bench and somebody else to play, then that's what you have to do it.
Yeah.
And then they look at me like that because, you know, let me joke a little bit. Like I said that to a player though, like, and it's normal. You're going to face it here sooner or later than every coaches, young coaches or pretty successful coaches. They face it for sure. Like, hey coach, why you stop me now? You know, I said, look inside. Do they play five? I have five players on the court. You look at me. Of course. I said, okay, I'm not hurting my team. Am I right? So instead of you, somebody else checked in. Am I right? So actually, you're not going against me. You're going against your teammate.
Yes, that's a good point.
That's a good point. And then the team turns, and then we win. And I say, okay, coach, sorry, you're right, like 100%. Like you don't have to go to me. I'm here to help you. Tomorrow is going to happen vice versa, that thing. So, of course, we got to have rules. And, of course, players that they lead the team, they have to need to have a little bit of a different treatment because, you know, mistakes and turnovers are part of the game. But we have living examples when in the playoffs against Red Star, that it was the underdog and we were the favorites before the 2016 Final Four. In a game one, everything goes south. You know, whatever we prepared, we don't make shots. Nando and Teo, they're playing the kind of, I can say, they're competing to each other who's going to miss more. So, great players, you know, our leaders. And the game is live, you know. And the game won, we all know how is the game won. It's all the surprises happen, most of the surprises in the game won.
Yep.
So, I had to sit both of them in a clutch moments. And then Jackson brings the energy we wanted to, and other players brings the energy, and then all of a sudden I bring one of them in, and Theo makes a shot, and then Nando, and then when I talk with both of them afterwards and before the game too, and they say, you know, I'm saying, but coach, why you have to take this both? You know, you could have had at least one of us. And I said, that's what my gut said at that moment, and you know, the team reacted. I'm not saying it's right now. I can judge that was the right decision, but that's what I said to the young coaches. You got to feel your guts. You got to trust your guts. You know, and of course, this comes with the experience as well. Like experience, you can't go and buy it out there. You got to experience it. You got to lose. You got to get some punches. You got to have some upsets. You got to have some bad losses. You got to lose the trophy. Everybody's going to criticize you. Hey, how you can't handle that team of a great budget or a great roster. Yeah, it happens. So it comes with the experience out there.
Yeah, I'm really big. I'm an intuitive communicator. I listen to my gut a lot, and that's also why I'm really big on nutrition. So my gut is healthy as well, so I can make the right decisions in life. And it's really important, I think, for coaches to understand, or I mean, it's not only coaching, it's management, it's when you deal with people. I think in general, when you deal with people, when there's so many factors that you can't control, you have to listen to your gut. Sometimes it's based on experience. Sometimes it's just intuition in that moment that you see, you feel it, it's unexplainable, right? You know, it's data is big these days and you have numbers to justify things, but not everything you can't, there's humans out there that are playing and there's human interactions that you can't, you have to really make a gut decision. And I think it's important that you have to trust that gut and roll with it sometimes.
Well, you brought something in your statement right now. You said about management, you said about many factors, and you said about data. Data are very are great, and I trust data a lot, but I need to trust my assistant coaches, I need to trust my doctors, my physios, and I need to trust my guts as well during the game, because the game is live, and the other coach is also prepared for you. He prepares some other tricks, you know, the game, it goes south, as I said, your main player got 3 fouls early in the game. Also, whatever, you got to be prepared for the plan B or plan C. And management is very important to that factor. You know, we could not achieve what we have achieved over here if the management, Andre or everybody, would not keep us over here and trust us. That's normal. But as a coach, you got to be ready to get fired on the first moment. Like, you got to be ready for that. But as soon as you are, you know, trust your job, your work ethics, as I said, your assistant coaches, your players, you got to be ready to follow your ethics and put your you know, put your fundamentals out there, what you want the team look, and try to build the right you know, the right atmosphere, as you said, and because tradition is not winning, definitely. Mm-hmm. The atmosphere is winning over there, the chemistry you're building, so the culture. So wins and trophies are buying time for coaches to establish their philosophy even more and to actually work on it. It is buying time for us. That's what it is. Of course, it is a glory and everything, like probably money and extension of contract and everything. But actually what is deeply inside in the coaching world, it is buying time for you as a coach to, you know, to go with more years to establish and to coach also the management, the people are around you. Hey, this is a good way. It works. The system works.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's the process, right? Like there's a process behind everything. And you have to also see the nuances. Sometimes you lose, but you're actually winning because you played the right defense. The other team is just making tough shots and you just have to move on. You have to look past it and move on into the, you know, into your team's development. If we just before we move on to the organizational in the second quarter about organization and communication part, I would like to ask you if you can describe what means playing well to you. Like if Cska plays well, how do you see and what does it mean when you see, okay, now this is what I want to see. This is like, can you have like 3 or 4 things that you feel like are essential for a good game for you to see?
Well, essential for me is to respect the job you did and to respect the club you are in and to respect our principles. There is a fundamental for us to compete. And listen to what I'm saying, not just to play hard. I think for that level in playing for Cska or playing for Fenerbahce or playing for Barcelona or playing for FS or playing for Milano or so whatever, Real Madrid, It's actually something that if you don't have it, then you don't belong in that team, like playing hard. Or, am I right? Or practicing hard.
Yeah.
But to compete, it's very important to say to yourself at the end of practice, today I did compete. Or at the end of the day, today I did compete. I play honestly out there. I did what my coaches asked from me. I was honest out there. I was not trying to cheat. I was giving all my best over there to compete. I was focused and concentrated all the time, and I was motivated. Concentration and motivation are two factors that if one you miss, then it doesn't work that mm-hmm. way. You need to have in each practice and each game both. That's why I said to many players, like, you know, sometimes, guys, if you don't feel it, you better come before practice and tell me, hey, coach, sit me down. Sit me out today. It's not written over here in your forehead that you don't have a good day today.
Yeah.
Or other days when I prepare my veterans and I say to them, and this goes to the communication, today, be ready, I'm going to go on you hard. Coach, why? Because that's the way to wake up the team and to do like we had in the winning teams. And that goes to that part where I said, we got a winning streak of 20-0, right? Like we had, I don't know, 12 wins in a straight in a EuroLeague and 8 in VTB. So we go 20-0. And all of a sudden, we feel the giants. We feel undefeated. No, that the loss is somewhere there and is waiting for you.
It's like, waiting for you. Yeah.
Upset. So we don't want that upset to happen when it matters, but better to do it now. So you choose me, coach. You're the leader. I got to go from you. So this is also part that, you know, we can use. And this is all that I'm saying and communicating to them during the summer. And again, not everybody can accept that. But those that they accept, at the end of the season, they're going to come and hug you and say, you're right. And thank you for that.
And it's well worth it in the end, right? When that happens, like when you stay true to your principles, you are following up what you're always set to do. And at the end, if it works out, it works out. It's even more gratifying, you know. If it doesn't work out, at least you can say you followed your principles and you did what you always wanted to do.
Exactly. So that's my answer to that question. So that's when I feel that my team, yes, we did it. When I feel that my team, it doesn't respect as soon as the ball goes up to the air. It doesn't respect our principles. It doesn't respect the history of this club, the culture we have. It's important. When you come to the culture that is a winning culture and that team has a success, it's easier for the coach. That's it goes to this, what I said. You know, like you buying time and you winning time to bring also some new generations, because this is our third generation now in CSKA. Yeah. I dare to say in 7 years, we have a third generation, the 2016 generation. We took over from you guys, from Ettore. You know, it became the 2019 that we're going now to 2020 with a different generation.
Yep.
The core of the team, we try to keep it untouched. It's not easy. We have a lot of competitors out there like that. They have a great budget and also system. So it was not easy for CSKA, but still we're doing a great job. The management, the sponsors are there. And that's a huge thing. To have a stable management and to have a stable sponsor behind that's huge. That's the pillars. Without that, we don't exist. Without that,
it's essential, right? I mean, that's for success. That everything works out the way you're really. It's through communication, honestly. You know, like keeping everybody on the same page and keep everybody engaged and moving on into the same direction. And that's the key. And my question to you was on this part, on this communication part, was you mentioned the captain. It's like you read my sheet. You know, you see everything I wrote here, and like I'm actually prepared these topics to talk about, because the relationship with a captain is essential, and not many coaches or not many people from the outside understand the connection between the head coach and the captain, and I've witnessed that. In Lithuania, it's extremely important, the relationship between the captain and the head coach, and it's always the information exchange. So talk to me a little bit about the information you're looking for out of the captain and what information the captain provides you with about the team, and that you also could relate to the captain that you find important. So what are some nuances there to understand?
I'll give you two examples, though, that are very important for that topic. The example number one is my first captain, Viktor Hryapa, great player, many years in CSKA. When I call him to my office, and after the second time we had the conversation, first time we had a normal conversation, everything like what I want from my captain and everything. But on my second conversation, that was a little bit more concrete and direct, allow me not to get into the details. Then Viktor says to me, but coach, I didn't expect that, because with other coaches it was not like that. I didn't expect that the relationship will be that open, like you want that much from me. And I said, you're my right hand over there. You got to go in the locker room and I feel safe. I go out and whatever principles we said, whatever we like follow, what is the main idea? I need to feel right that you're going to represent it to the team. And when somebody's trying to feel not good because he's not playing time, or he has difficult time at home or something, you got to be the one, you know? So he kind of felt like different regarding the other situation he was facing before. Mm-hmm. While with Kyle Hines, which is the second example, it was totally different. Both, they were not that vocal in the locker room. You know Kyle how it is. But when he needed to, he was there for everybody. And he was leading by example. That's very important. You can't say to Kyle he's not competing in practice. You can't go out there and say, you know, you're not competing, you're not concentrate. Maybe he's not going to make his free throws. Maybe he's not going to hedge well. He's going to do some fouls. He's going to miss here and there or something. But you can't say that he's not competing. So the captain should lead by example, definitely. And that's the third part, which is my captain now and a co-captain, Nikita Kurbanov and Will Clyburn. Those guys, they lead by their example. They're living example for the others. And I like when I have such captains that I can challenge, because the rest, you know, they're going to follow. I had this conversation with Greg Popovich, great, great coach, when he says to us, when we visit San Antonio, we played a scrimmage back then with Panathinaikos, he says, listen, I have Tim Duncan. And when I challenge him and I criticize him, he's first. He's going to sprint first. He's going to do first the thing. Then the others are just followers. Mm-hmm. They got to follow. So that's very important for having captains that they're leading example for the others. And, you know, I usually talk more with a captain, and I fully agree with what you said about the relation of coach and a captain. I talk more. I explain him the situation, how the decision will go, and especially on the bad moments. Also on the good moments when the team is flying and it looks like we're undefeated, he needs to put them all under the ground. Both feet stable, stay humble, keep working. Coach now is challenging you. Don't respond to that. Don't respond to that. You know, try to be not that much distracted from the media or, you know, this Facebook, Instagram, or whatever exists out there. So pretty much, I'm not the guy that I want to learn everything what happened in the locker room. Whatever they talk, or if they make fun out of me, how I criticize this guy. I'm not the guy, because you ask me like what I'm expecting from a captain. I expect from the captain. I don't want to have also other guys like physios or doctors to tell me to come and sneak and say, hey, you know, this guy says that. I don't care about that. I have a straightforward relationship. And I kind of, with this experience, almost 30 years working in this job, I do understand the guys on the court when I see their body language. I'm going to invite them on an individual talk, or as I said, in a dinner or lunch, and I'm going to open my heart, and they're going to open their heart eventually. So I need, though, the captain and the co-captain to be on the same page with me. But also, because it happened, and that's a true story as well, I can mention names as well, but...
My podcast, I would like to keep it without names and without any kind of, so there's like, we just,
it doesn't matter. I think it's more interesting though when it's again names, but okay. I trust what you said, but when I had kind of a confrontation with a player, that's back then, all right, so it's not recent, so don't make any assumptions. So the two captains, they came to me and said, coach, we're ready to help you now. So all right, that's why I have you. What do you suggest? Let's talk. All right, let's talk. So we talk, the three of us, and he says, okay, where you can do this, you write for that, or can you do that to help this player to perform? I said, definitely. But that guy, I can push him out of his limits, because that guy is going to save the day. And it happened exactly like that. And I really appreciate the moment when the captains, they came to me and said, okay, coach, we're going to find a solution. It can't work like that. Yes, we're going to find a solution. Thank you for doing that. So that's, then you understand that they feel accountable. You hold them accountable in the summer when you explain them how the team is going to look, what the roster is going to look. You know, the team is here financially to help us. We're going to assign this guy and that guy. They're very excited, and they feel accountable for everything. But they proved it. Mm-hmm. When they came and said, now we feel accountable. Now we're going to help you. We stay by you. Tell us what we have to do. And they did it. And that's tremendous.
That's the most gratifying part, right? When it all comes together and you see that the communication worked out, you know, to everybody's favor, not to your favor, not to their favor, to the team's favor, to the organization's favor. And when everybody's on the same page, especially the captainship and the head coach, it's a completely different team chemistry or team goals, team goal setting, and the path. But when we talk about the relationships, there's also relationships within the coaching staff. And I was wondering also from your side, what's your expectation from your coaching staff in terms of like how you manage it, how often you meet, how important it is for you to get feedback from them, what feedback you're looking for, the arguments you have. It's important to argue and disagree because you have to also find ways to, you know, to be on the same page and to have the right tactics in place. So what's your approach to your staff?
Am I going first? My podcast first goes. Or Andreas goes first, so I have to know. What can I say?
I'm saving you for last. I'm saving the best for last. So you come in right after Andreas.
Okay. Listen, no, I'm joking. It doesn't matter, man. So for me, it's easy. I mentioned Andreas because we're together like 15 years almost. Yeah. So, and besides the professional life, we're also related family. I'm married. Him, I was the best man in their marriage, me and my wife. So we share a lot of moments. But it's also important where I brought Daryl as my ex-player, we worked together in Pau and Anton and Dennis and Kostas Hadzichristos and Pasha and all the other associates that they have, doctors, physiotherapists, and of course the management, which is very important on a daily basis we have. But if we talk strictly about coaching stuff, and not the medical staff or the management. I am from those coaches that I like to be challenged. I don't want the yes men around me. I was the one that I was going through that process with Željko 13 years. That what he appreciated from me from the first moment. You know, all the relations are starting with doubts.
Mm-hmm.
Friendship. Loving affairs, professional relationship, everything starts with a doubt.
Yeah.
Is he the right one? Is she the right one?
Yeah.
Is he for me? Is he sneaky? Is he going behind my back? You have plenty of doubts. When you're coming to the situation, you're going through, you challenge them also, you are testing them, and that comes with experience. I was tested by Željko back then. I'm testing my assistant coaches a lot of times. But to come straight forward to the answer, I like when the coaches are coming with the ideas. And even though I might disagree, I want them to defend their ideas with fundamental, with things that they can be, so strong arguments. So they can convince me why they support that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm from those coaches that I like to hear them during the game as well, from what they are, their speciality is. If Andreas has to tell me, hey, this defense works, so keep doing it, or this defense doesn't work, change it. Or Anton can jump and say, listen, can we have a different guarding over there? Because that guy, when we're switching, creating problems down there, or Daryl can go and talk to Joel Bolomboy about what he messed up because he did a wrong in defense, or Dennis, that he's doing a live scout. You know that we have a live scout, and also in the halftime we can go and analyzing things and put a picture on the screen. It's different when coaches are talking, but it's different when you show it also on the screen. And not only the bad things, but also the good things, whatever it works, because you need to give a feedback, a positive feedback to the players as well.
Absolutely.
Not only we used to, because I worked back then with a lot of coaches, we used to say only criticism, like, what are you doing wrong? But the players are waiting for us to say, hey, you're doing good this thing. So watching it. Wow, that works great. So it's great. So if I answer to your question, that's it. I could have met with them more and more, but I understand their personal life, and we usually come 1 hour before practice. We meet and we explain that if it's necessary in some difficult moments, we might come in 2.5 hours. It's normal that with Andreas, I have a little bit more of analytics because of the relation and everything we have so much. But I trust everybody's opinion. I'm from the coaches that before I take my decision, I will ask everybody to say their opinion for whatever reason. We're going to dress up, that in Vetebe, let's say we have that rule that from 8 foreigners, you have to dress up 6. So you got to sit down 2. From what kind of a starting lineup we're going to have? What is the defense we're going to choose? You know, when the coaches are going deep to the analysis, I trust their analysis. Though, because I was 13 years as an assistant coach and I was preparing a lot of games and getting into the, if I may say, to the brain of the opponent coach to see what he's thinking, I'm analyzing myself. So I try to, you know, I try to challenge them because they know that I'm watching games. I'm not going to just leave it up to the air. I do trust their opinion. Yeah. I'm analyzing a lot as well myself, but I'm going to ask them their opinion and we're going to go straight forward without saying, hey, you're right, you're wrong. During the game, I might challenge them a little bit more about I'm being a little bit more of a emotional, let's say, in when the things are not going good, but just to challenge them. At the same time, I might give them to run the practice in one practice, and I do that very often, or run the timeout, or run that game as well. So kind of prepare them for the next day.
Yeah, it's the justification has to always be on firm ground, right? The assistant coach, you have to have certain Definitely. Amount of like, you know, you always have to also be able to play the devil's advocate. Andreas said that also when I talked to him. But I had the experience where I came into it when I was with my first year, my first couple of months with Messina, and I was like unprepared for exactly what you're saying. I had an idea. But at that point, I was not capable of justifying why. It's just, again, I'm a gut-based, intuition-based. But in those moments, you have to have foundational justification, you know, to in order to say, yeah, but if they do this, then you can do this and this. And this is, you know, there has to be a progression of your suggestion.
Well, foundational justification might be also that, coach, you know what? You got to feel my guts. I analyzed 10 games and I see that exactly. That happened. That's also foundational. You know, that's an also justification. Hey, coach, I watched 10 games. You watched 3. All right. You want to trust me? You trust me. You don't want to trust me? I got to say to you because I want to help you. That doesn't mean I'm right. I might not be wrong. But you know what? You're going to be the voice, the loud voice or the second opinion of the coach that he has in his mind.
Yeah.
You want to hedge? I want to switch. But you go and say, no, hedge is the best defense. But I want to switch. And then you're going to go hedge. And then you're going to get, all right. So, you know, you're going to have it over here.
Yeah.
Why? Because of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, these are the dynamics I love, really, in the staff where you get to also look back on that later on. But you mentioned the live scouting. Can I ask how many clips maximum you can show in a short time frame at halftime?
Well, from back then in years, because I was the one that I'm proudly saying that I will work with the VHS.
Yeah.
Keep notes on 1 hour, 30 minutes, 20 seconds is that one clip. So put the tape in, run it, like make that. So now you got the computers and that summarizing. You know, we talked with Andreas and Anton and Dar a lot about that. I think we can keep the players concentrated for 20 minutes on the video session. Give them like quick clips of what we're watching, and we're trying whatever we're analyzing to try to work on a court. Mm-hmm. So if we, let's say, analyze their defense, we're gonna go work out there for our offense. If we watch them their offense, we're gonna go work over their defense. If now the amount of time is not helping us because we have back-to-back games. As it happens now in Europe and also in NBA, we might go and try to summarize it in 30 minutes and give the individual, the personnel, to analyze the personnel and try to see and be in focus on the main situation. So we had some long meetings, though, when it's some bad. So we're talking about the analysis and the cut clips. That's different. But I'm in favor of when we have some upsets, I'm going to watch the whole game. But when I say I'm going to go watch the whole game, I'm not going to watch with the popcorns and, you know, like Coca-Cola's or something and go let it go. We're going to analyze the game and take us 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
We're going to analyze and take us 4 hours, like clip and clip. Why this? Why that? The detail. And when I see them, maybe like something, now you lead the – so they kind of, you know, I pretty much have a voice that everybody can hear. So I'm not, they're not gonna sleep. Although I had I give you maybe one good thing. A player lied in a, it happened also back then, and he kind of was sleepy because 6 o'clock in the morning he had to talk with his wife in the United States. So yeah, there are long meetings, there are short meetings for sure. Whatever the situation asks from you.
But at halftime, in the heat of the moment, you have to keep it short. So what's the time frame?
Like three, four groups. We always leave them a little bit to discuss there, take their breath and discuss there whatever happens. Also in timeouts, and that's PT. I'm trying to ask from the EuroLeague Union of Coaches and also the EuroLeague Game Department to extend a little bit the timeout. You know, I really value the 15 seconds that we gather as coaches. If you see me and everybody yes. says his opinion, then I go with one idea to the timeout. But in Europe, the timeout is 1 minute. And on 50 seconds, the referee is coming and said, come, because I'm going to call you a second timeout. I said, you know, try to be a little bit more cooperative. I'm not going against the game. I'm not going against the TV rights or so, whatever. Like, try to extend a little bit the timeout. But coming back to your question, like in the halftime, maybe three clips, two clips, you know, one in defense, one in offense, or two in defense and three in defense. It didn't work that. So it depends.
Well, like you say, like if you're talking about the timeouts also, thinking about it from the marketing aspect, which you work with ice cream and you talked about marketing as well, it's a good advertisement tool to have 30 extra seconds instead of 60 seconds, 90 seconds for the league to have a little bit more.
Thank you.
Income.
I said that. I said that. Bravo. You're going to help the coaches. Yeah. We need, you know, I think that the majority of coaches will be in favor. I talk with them and they will be in favor. I hope that they're going to extend it a little bit. I was the one in Panathinaikos back then to ask that halftime not to be 15 minutes, but to extend it to 20. But then they came to TV rights and said, listen, the basketball game, it goes how much? Like 2 hours? This we can give you. But if it goes more above that, then the schedule and how it goes, the time on TV, is difficult. So I kind of understand them. Like, it's not going to be like tennis. Tennis is going to go like maybe 3 hours, maybe four, maybe five, maybe two. In basketball, they need to have a streak this 2 hours or whatever it is like to give you. So within these 2 hours, you got to fit everything. That's most probably why they don't extend also to go in the quarter 12 minutes instead of, you know, playing now 10. Yeah. So in NBA, you have 12. Over here, you have 10. So we kind of try to make compromises here and there to help them, help us do their
That makes
best.
Sense. That makes sense. So moving on to the third quarter, I know like we've been talking for an hour, just respecting your time. I would like to still talk.
Wow, we're talking for an hour?
Yeah, it flies by. I'm like this conversation.
Maybe we got cut and go in second time. So let's go third quarter and fourth quarter just like that.
All right. So anything you did different, we're reflecting now a little bit on your on your experiences, anything you did different 10, 15 years ago that you're not doing anymore and you look back on, it's like, all right, I have to adjust. And this is the main thing I adjusted.
Definitely. The amount of practice, how strong you're going to go in practice and the approach to the players, the communication with them. There are many things that have changed. I can tell you, when I was head coach of Philippos Thessalonikis or MEND, the A2 division, not well-known teams, but in my heart, because I spent very, very important years over there, we could have worked like hours and hours, like 2.5 hours, 3 hours or so, whatever. And especially when you have one game in a week, the players that were exhausted. I remember one veteran that I signed him from Aris to help us get into the first division. He came in one practice because he was veteran. And he says to me, coach, I signed for Philippos. I didn't sign for Real Madrid. If I knew that you're going to have so much of video sessions and practices and weightlifting and everything, how could I stay in third or fourth division? I try to retire. And he was smiling, of course, like we were over practicing sometimes. I dare to say that. It was different times, different pressure for the players. Now the players are going, you know, with more games. If you see those elite players that they're playing also national teams, they go
unbelievable,
100 games. So, and with this this pressure they have, we need to have certain adjustments as well as coaches.
It's really good you mentioned that. You know, obviously the condensed schedule forces you to be more efficient, but also Brad Stevens and our people, coaches who visited our preseason or just preparation process. The one thing that everybody comes away saying is that how time efficient the practices are, and with Brad Stevens, it's just like everything is so condensed, just focused on like let's get through this, let's go bam bam bam, you know, and the volume. The volume is condensed into like an hour, 15, 20 minutes, but it's focused.
Exactly.
It's focused, and the intensity level has to be there to compete, and you get through it, and everybody can go on working individually or get treatment or whatever, but you have to be there for an hour, 15 minutes, and you just get out of there.
That's exactly what we do right now. Like the main practices during the season, it cannot be more than 1:15, 1:10 or something. Sometimes you may have very effective practice in 55 minutes and being there and have everything what you want to go through. Then if you're going to go extend 1:45 and you're losing just 30 minutes out there. Yeah. Definitely players will come earlier, shoot with the coaches, do some individual skill workout, or maybe go into the lift, having the video. But this 1:15 or 1 hour, compete, as you said, compete on the highest level.
Exactly. There's one more thing, actually two more things I would like to reflect on. First of all, one thing or the biggest struggle when you, like the rich experience you had at Panathinaikos and you went to become a head coach, what was the biggest challenge or the early struggle that you felt like? Because you were a head coach before you went to Panathinaikos, then you became an assistant coach, and then you went back to being a head coach with a rich experience. What was the one challenge you felt like that was something that you were struggling with early on?
Well, again, I'm going to go to listen to your guts and listen what your feelings are. Because there are many thousand experts out there, including journalists or and friends and my family too, that they know, oh, go and get that offer. Oh, go get that offer. But you ready? What you like? Go get that. Like they know better than you what is better for you, you know, and what how you feel it. Well, I'll put it that way. In my 13 years in PAO, I had three very important offers to get out of an assistant job. Maybe the most, advertised or whatever, like the well-known it was that when Kereheta called me twice, actually, to take over Baskonia. And, I had to reject that offer, which was very respectful. And, I thank him many times. And now we have a great relation. But back then, I was fulfilled of what I was doing, and I had a commitment of what I was doing. You know, that doesn't mean that you cannot go out there and have an interview, but I was very committed on what I was doing, and I never regret the moments I had. This is the experience I gained. The respect I had for my head coach, Željko, was giving me plenty of space over there to operate, to teach, to work with the players, as I said, and to being ready for grabbing the next job, either that is in Banvit or even that it was in PAO when I became first time as a head coach at the year of 25. I was one of the youngest coaches in this sport, coaching Peđa Stojaković, Prelević, or Dean Garrett, those guys that they play in NBA afterwards. So, when the circle was finished and we stayed 1 year out, 2012, together with Željko, preparing the next possible destination. I thought a lot, and we had a lot of clinics together also. I think that we had like 6 or 7 clinics. We went around the world, like from Dubai to Sweden to Belgrade, Athens or whatever. We had a lot of clinics. And my phone and my agent's phone never stopped calling. And I said, all right. And I talked with Željko. First, it was the person that when Banvit came with the offer, I told him, you know, I feel like that's the time. So I feel good. And especially because the team is not, I don't know, a brand name. I'm going to start from there. It's a good environment. And I never regret what I did. So it comes with a situation. It comes from the, you know, as I said, from the gut, from the feeling. So yeah. It's not any specific advice out there. But if I can give one advice, staying committed on what you did. And if you're fulfilled and you feel that you belong, When you feel that you belong somewhere, you're going to give your best self. Regardless if you're a first assistant coach, second assistant coach, third assistant coach, you're a trainer, you're the head. If you feel that you belong, I felt that I belonged. I felt that I had a mission to accomplish. And I was really happy with what I was doing. The only thing I was not happy, because I didn't have an answer when my daughter, she was younger, and I was going to say, and that's a funny story. I said, where are you going, Daddy? I said, I'm going to work. And she replies to me, but Daddy, can I ask you something? Why the work is not coming one time at home? And you always have to go to the. So that was an answer that I couldn't say to explain.
It's so also important for the leaders to make the staff or the people below you to make them feel valuable, like they belong. You know, like you felt like you belong, but there was people up above you, like Jelko or the organization, who made you feel that way. And I think a lot of organizations, wherever, like it's taken for granted, you know. And then there's workers, assistant coaches, staff members, whatever. They feel like, what am I, like, nobody's listening to me. Like, I mean, I'm doing my job. I'm loving what I do. But if you don't feel like you're part of something, even the smallest, even like, that's what I loved at CSKA, even the cleaning ladies, everybody felt like they're part of this idea, right? They're part of something bigger than them, and they're contributing.
Well, if it's not the case, and you feel that you're being ignored, then be persistent. Be persistent, and you're gonna find a way.
Yeah.
Because if you're gonna be persistent, you're gonna prevail eventually. But you need to be persistent on what are you defending. What is your ideas? So. At one point, if your ideas and your values need to be listened, they're going to be listened. So be persistent. If you don't feel that you belong, you better go other way. Just go other way. Because eventually, if you don't go, somebody else is going to kick you out. But if you feel that you're not heard, you're going to be heard if you're going to be persistent.
Very good advice. So fourth quarter, I don't know if it's fourth quarter or overtime, but I'm going to philosophy because you mentioned values, and I would like to cling on this and put a pin into the principles and values of a person. There's a lot of parallels, right, that we also always see whenever you are an open person, open coach, open personality, you can find correlations between life and the sport you're pursuing, like whether it's basketball, football, as a coach, you can see parallels, and you can sometimes have metaphors that are like used like the knives in the mouth. You can draw it from real life experiences. Which experiences or values, principles in essence, you see transferring from your life to the game fluently, that you feel like that's something I want my players also to have, what I feel in my personal life that I have, that needs to be transferred on the court, and that's one thing that the players need to understand.
Well, I can connect it with the third quarter because we have a transition from the third quarter to the fourth quarter.
Bro.
We talk about the assistant coaches not to be heard. Allow me to say that the assistant coaches need to have an empathy, and that word is very important, an empathy of what the head coach is going through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, so if you want to be heard, you got to try to be in the shoes of this guy of what he's going through, the pressure, the challenges, players are not playing that much, they have everything, media, whatever it is, family, everything. All right, so you got to have a little bit of empathy or empathy in general. So I have empathy for my players too, of what they're going through. I do explain them in the beginning of the summer again. What you're gonna going through, how it's gonna look to play for a winning team and a winning culture. So empathy is the first for sure. But during the game, I want to lead by example. I can't be caught not to be concentrated. I can't allow that to myself, not going prepared to a game. It doesn't matter the game, you know. You might play that game against, allow me to say, with all the respect to Astana, that you know you're going to beat them 20 or 30. That doesn't mean I'm not going to scout the game. That doesn't mean I'm not going to be prepared with my ATOs, with my possible substitutions, different defenses, my schedule. So I got to lead by example. if I'm respectful to the club I'm representing, if I'm respectful to the organization, if I'm respectful to the practices, if I'm concentrated and ready 24/7 for you, I need you to be there for me as well. So I believe that we are under the radar of the players as coaches. Players are always feeling you as well. When we feel them, when we see them, their body language, they know your body language too. Yeah. How you've been dressed, how you've been, if you're shaved, how, what is your jersey, what shoes you're wearing, how you smell, how you, everything is important in life because this is a mind game. And it's a mind game with the opponent, but it's a mind game with your associates, with your colleagues, with your players. So I want them to be concentrated and motivated consistently. And if they don't feel it, you better inform me. Like the day before, hour before or something, because we're all humans. We might not have a good day.
Yeah.
All right, that's acceptable. Like, let's have an information. But I think that a lot of values we have on sport, I like when I talk with players like my ex-players, like Johnny Rogers, for instance, that he's working now in NBA, or I don't know, Oded Kataj, that he's now head coach of Panathinaikos, and many others, I can mention names. I really appreciate the way we talk now, and they now, going back from their really tremendous career they had as a players, and now they transfer it to a GM career or to the head coach career, and they go to another side of the river, like I used to say. I say, welcome now to the other side. Now you got to think about everybody, not only yourself. Now you can see it, how it looks. Or Saras, let's say Saras now has been, you know, I had a really close relation with Saras as a player and a coach, an assistant coach back then, right? I was the one, I defended him in certain situations in his personal life and in his playing life because he was not playing the first years the way everybody was expecting from him or from himself as well. And he had to solve some other issues. So that's very important. Empathy is very important. And following a lot of those important values and ethics you have in sport, in life as well. Because at the end of the day, if we can prepare the next generations to be out there and vote for the right person and respect others' rights, you know, we did a great job. Maybe we haven't won titles, but we prepare the other generation. I talk about the junior coaches, and I talk about the youth coaches. Maybe those guys, the kids that they're coming and watch, they're not going to be the next Kurbanov or the next Will Clyburn or the next Pau Gasol, but they're going to be a great fans. They're going to know the sports. They're going to know what basketball represents and the ethics out there. So compete, yes, within the four lines, yes. Have the values after that in life. So know when an elder person comes to help him, do it out of your, without expecting something from life.
Yes.
Do something good, and then the life will treat you back. I said that if you don't respect the game, then the game will not respect you back for sure. That's the law of basketball. That's the law of life. You don't respect, they're not going to respect you out there for sure.
This is a great summary of everything we talked about right now, you know, from integrity, from empathy, from the trust you have to have in your staff, everything, you know, like you have to respect the work you put in order to get the respect back, basically. And that's always something that, even with Ettore, that's the same thing that he's also talked about, you know, like you assistant coaches have to respect their job and they have to empathize with the coach and put themselves in his shoes. Everything is, I feel that with high achievers, there's this continuity of respecting the work you do day in, day out. And like you said, to be persistent in what you do, and then you will get the reward automatically at a certain point. There's not a timeline on it, but you will get rewarded for it one way or the other.
Last but not least, if you don't have that fire, you better step aside. If you still have that fire in you, if you're a head coach or assistant coach, keep going, keep doing it. You need to have that fire. You said something before that, and I forgot, but I bring it back. This all success you had as an assistant coach, as a head coach, let them rest in peace. That's a past. We have a future. That's a new challenge. And I put a lot of goals and small goals, small targets in front of me every day, every practice, small goals you need to achieve. the other goals, all right, let them rest in peace, as you said. That's a great thing, what you said. So let them rest in peace and move forward. As soon as you have that fire, you feel fulfilled and you feel that you belong. Go out there and fight.
Brilliant, brilliant. So now we're crossing paths. The game is over. We're going to shake hands. But before we say goodbye, I would like to have to know your one habit that you do, or one book that you read maybe currently that's helping you to take the edge off things. What is something that you could give to listeners to read?
Allow me to take that book.
Please.
That's the last I finished now.
Leaders Eat Last by Simon Sinek. Perfect. Right. Awesome.
Right now, I'm listening to that book. So I really recommend it to many coaches. Allow me to open the, because we have now the audiobook.
Yeah. So
Andreas teach me that. He's an IT guy. Just a sec. I don't know why he's not connected. It's Pep Guardiola's book.
Ah, okay.
A trial lesson from soccer. Very, very, very well said. I had some connection problem over here in my iPad. So
Pep Guardiola. Okay, I'll find it. I was reading Alex Ferguson's book.
Oh, well. I read that. Also great book. Great book.
Yes.
Let me make one more try. Yes.
Where is Andreas when you need him? Pep. Yeah. Perfect.
All right. Great book. So.
Excellent, coach. Efkaristo, and good luck on the final four.
Barakalo. Stay healthy, all right?
Always. Oh, cold showers help.
Thank you.
Thank you.